Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Republican Nick Tzitzon, Democrat Dan Johnson Weinberger, and Art Sear of Carthage College. Our program tonight coming to you from the Sirius XM studios on Chicago's Great West Side, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289 on this, the last Sunday of the George W. Bush administration, and I know all the liberals listening and watching to this program, this is the Sunday night you have been waiting for. He's got less than 48 hours to go in the White House. However, since he became president and even during the times when he was leading up to the presidency, we've done well over 400 shows about the Bush administration, and tonight will be the last one. And the question we ask each and every one of you, whether you are a Republican, a Democrat, an independent, as long as you're an American citizen who can legally vote, what is your final assessment of President George W. Bush? Your final assessment of President George W. Bush. And I can tell you at the beginning, this is going to be the last show that we talk about how we got into Iraq, why we got into Iraq. Maybe, hopefully, the last show we spend a lot of time talking about mission accomplished and some of the other mistakes that the president has made in Katrina. So this is your opportunity, because starting next week, you know, we're going to have at least four, perhaps 8 years talking about Barack Obama, as we have much of the last year as he has led his way to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But tonight, that's the question. Let us begin with the man who assesses history, Art Sear from Carthage College, the A.W. Clawson Professor. History will render their verdict many, many years from now. But you, sir, I'm anointing you. We're going to give you the first opportunity to offer a historical perspective in a relatively short period of time on George W. Bush.
Well, to make my own biases clear, I think his father was a very successful president, especially as an executive, even though he served only one term. I think George W. Bush has been a notably unsuccessful president in various ways. I do think there are very specific policy areas in which the president deserves credit. Public health initiative in Africa concerning HIV/AIDS, which was a very sincere effort. Mm-hmm. There have been others. I think Bush, by default, of necessity in his second term, was forced by the realities of the world during and since World War II to accept multilateralism in the UN and multilateral diplomacy. He's also, however, confirmed the Republican Party's role as the party of big spending. He's managed to surpass Lyndon B. Johnson, which many of us thought was not possible in terms of the rate of increase of federal spending. Big change, Bruce.
Our Democrat tonight is Dan Johnson Weinberger. Dan, again, you've got one more time to beat the pinata. But again, looking at it in the spirit of the new administration, but also looking at it as someone who really has been hammering George Bush every time you've been on this program.
Yep.
What's your final assessment of his presidency?
I'd have to give him about a D minus. I think Art is right. That his AIDS in Africa initiative has been a success, and he really advanced the ball. But on a range of issues, certainly the economy now that we're in a recession, tax policy, more tax cuts for the rich that we can't afford, the disastrous invasion and occupation of Iraq, which didn't make us any safer, and his inept managerial ability, best symbolized by Katrina, gives him a total grade of D minus.
Our Republican tonight is Nick Tzitzon. Nick, veteran policy advisor, but welcome to the program. You're defending the Bush administration this evening. How far do you really want to go to defend it?
Well, thanks for the softball assignment, Bruce. As always, I appreciate your sense of humor. In preparing for the show, I visited realclearpolitics.com, as any good politico would. There seems to be a developing consensus throughout the world of political analysis that 9/11 is the defining moment of this presidency. It's the defining policy, the defining role that implemented a vast array of new policies. Here's what I have to say about that. President Bush, like him or not, ushered the country through arguably one of the worst moments in national history. And like it or not, President Bush has insisted and encouraged policies that have kept the country safe since 9/11. I don't pretend to stand here and defend everything, but I think that there are some valid points that deserve credit. And I think that the immediate aftermath of a presidency is the worst possible time to evaluate a presidency.
That also, by the way, your point about keeping America safe, that is going to be the toughest thing for the new president to be able to say 4 years from now that he did the exact same thing. And we'll let the discussion elaborate on that. But speaking of the defining moments, certainly one of the defining moments on September 11th was the initial shock when George Bush was told about what's happening. He had that frightened deer in the headlight look, which really to many liberals certainly defined him. But yet 3 days later, on September 14th, he went to ground zero and grabbed the bullhorn.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
That was the defining visual moment of this administration. And shortly after that, and the speech that he gave to Congress in which he drew the line in the sand, unanimous response. His success rate was in the high 90s. It was the highest support that any president has ever had since they've been keeping score in that respect. In your view, Art, give me the short version. From that moment, from that time when he had the American people and much of the free world in the palm of his hand, what went wrong?
Well, the invasion of Iraq, and especially the fact that the war did not go that well, certainly did not go according to the highly impractical plans and predictions of the administration, was one big factor. We also live in a time of very, very partisan division in politics and lack of fluidity between the parties. And in order to get reelected in 2004, Bush and associates emphasized that division in such a way that was guaranteed to reduce his popularity.
It's good that you bring that up, because one of the other things that George Bush will always mean to me, and that is he was the president of the United States in my lifetime when the United States were truly united.
Right.
They were drawn together by this horrible tragedy. We were all in the same boat together. Mm-hmm. We went through month after month of nonpartisan. There was no screaming. There was no yelling. There was a camaraderie when you were on trains.
I didn't mean to deny that. You asked me why it fell apart.
Right. No, and, but what I'm saying is that is there any way that it could have been avoided? Because it seems to me that at some point when you were that high, I mean, people were looking for people to criticize the president of the United States.
Right.
It's hard to believe the level of support that he had, yeah. And literally, the opposition were eunuchs.
Right.
What gave them the comfort, in your view, Dan, to sort of come out of the shell and begin to attack him?
Well, his policies were horrible. I mean, he had, as you said, a moment.
In Afghanistan, they were horrible?
No. I think he had almost near unanimity in supporting his attacking of the Taliban in order to get to al-Qaeda. But shortly thereafter, when he started this incessant harping on invading Iraq, that's not what the country was looking for.
I want to follow up on that, 1-800-723-8289. This is the last Sunday night of the Bush administration, your last opportunity to talk about George W. Bush on this program, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. From Youngstown, Ohio to Austin, Texas, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. It was at KLBJ in Austin, Texas that we did our very first show about the governor of Texas who wanted to be president of the United States. So we would be very interested in hearing from people listening on the KLBJ this evening about your assessment of George Bush as president of the United States. And one of the things that I want to talk a little bit about, I want to give you, Dan, an opportunity to respond to the one thing that George Bush was talking about, and in fact, and that was basically the various disappointments that he had. I mean, this past week, between the press conference and also his final address to the nation, he talked a lot about himself. In fact, in that final press conference, he discussed what disappointed him most about the past 8 years, and specifically on how the future and how history will judge him as president.
There have been disappointments. Abu Ghraib obviously was a huge disappointment during the presidency. You know, not having weapons of mass destruction was a significant disappointment. I don't know if you want to call those mistakes or not, but they were, things didn't go according to plan, let's put it that way. And, anyway, I think the historians will look back and they'll be able to have a better look at mistakes after some time has passed. I along Jake's question, there is no such thing as short-term history. I don't think you can possibly get the full breadth of an administration until time has passed.
Let's talk about weapons of mass destruction. Was it a mistake? Did he lie? In your view, what was the problem with weapons of mass destruction? Because once upon a time, when Democrats, many Democrats were backing him up, mm-hmm. when all this began, there were a lot of Democrats cheering him on.
Well, I
but
think
they
both,
didn't find the weapons of mass destruction.
No, I think most Democrats took him and the administration at their word, that they believed there were weapons of mass destruction. I happen to think they had an ideology that filtered their view of the world, and that because they wanted a justification to invade Iraq because they thought that'd be good for American power, they found their justification. I don't think it's – I mean, I think you got to classify it as they had a pre-existing motive to shift resources into Iraq, and they thought it was a good idea to topple Saddam Hussein, and 9/11 was an excuse for them to do so. That's why it was such a failure.
Nick?
Well, I want to make 2 points about Iraq. The first is that the administration's view that there were weapons of mass destruction was substantiated by the U.S. government's intelligence. I think the famous line used by Democrats, we looked at the same it was used by Republicans. Democrats looked at the same intelligence that the administration looked at, and they reached the same conclusion. As far as the strategic decision to go into Iraq, the other issue that I come back to is it seemed at the time that nobody had a better idea. Afghanistan was moving well at the time, and everybody agreed that there needed to be a continuation of our war on terror in light of the post 9/11 realities. And there was no better idea. It was go into Iraq and try to stand up a democracy and a lot of white noise on the other side.
I want to go back to something that Art, you said early on. You said that basically things were going very well for the president, and then it was even hard to find anybody that was going to be criticizing him. And yet there was in this climate in America, there was a drumbeat of war. Everyone was marching along, even members of Congress, Democratic members of Congress, were marching along. And they saw a political candidate, if you will, a political commodity that really was almost untouchable. And it was Ted Kennedy who first used the word liar when he talked about perhaps that the books were being cooked, the evidence was being cooked. Mm-hmm. Now, do you believe, again, I'm picking up on what you said in answer to question number one, I mean, the Democrats had to find something. Whether it was truthful or not, they had to find something to change what was a runaway freight train of re-election for George Bush, did they not?
I don't think partisan politics entered in, especially right after 9/11, into the way people voted in Congress. I think there's a much more serious problem in play, which is that for many years, well before the war in Iraq and 9/11, Congress has basically abandoned its constitutional responsibilities in terms of going to war. Since the Second World War, we haven't had a real declaration of war.
But it was popular.
No, I think the more fundamental problem, you're asking about politics in the Congress and criticism of Bush. I think the more serious problem, to give you the best answer I can, is that Congress has abdicated its constitutional responsibilities. And beyond that, in a very partisan time, partisan politics came into play. Intelligence is the most vexing, most difficult, most challenging responsibility of any president. Dwight Eisenhower, I believe, was the greatest president since the war. Ike said, among other things, it takes a strange kind of genius to run intelligence. The Bush administration was far too cavalier, far too simple-minded in their approach to Iraq and intelligence
generally. But insofar as the political opposition is concerned, before Ted Kennedy used the word liar to describe the president of the United States, it could have been an honest mistake. George Bush is not the first president that may have been given faulty intelligence information. John Kennedy was given faulty intelligence information about the Bay of Pigs. I mean, so it's not – Richard Nixon was given faulty intelligence.
That's why I quoted Eisenhower. You're absolutely right.
So my point is – so there wasn't anything unique about this. What became unique about this from a political standpoint is that Ted Kennedy was the beginning – he began to lead the charge that George Bush was a liar.
Because
not just he's
a very partisan politician and often irresponsible. I don't think you can hang everything on
go ahead.
Ted Kennedy,
now, hold on.
However.
What happened was – the neoconservatives around George Bush that were running the Defense Department, they wanted to attack Iraq.
Right.
Right? The Project for a New American Century said we need
a
new Pearl Harbor in order to convince the public to invade Iraq and topple Saddam Hussein. Well, everybody now knows 9/11 and al-Qaeda had absolutely nothing to do with Saddam Hussein and his terrible regime. But that's not how the neoconservatives saw it, and that's not how George Bush saw it. They saw it as an opportunity to make a big strategic move and invade Iraq and then come up with a justification, which was the weapons of mass destruction.
Nick.
It was a bipartisan initiative at the time is the point that I think is super relevant. I'll go to your point, Bruce, and I'll zoom back out. I question whether either candidate from the 2000 race, whether it had been Vice President Gore or George W. Bush, whoever comes out of Florida – is going to manage 9/11. I think you're absolutely right. At some point, either political party needs to find some way to nick away at a super tough political armor that exists when you lead the country through a moment of such difficulty as 9/11. And I think, for better or worse, Democrats came to the conclusion that Iraq was going
to
be that.
It seems to me also that – and again, when you look back to the very beginning of the administration, you had 50%, maybe over 50%, certainly 50% of the American people who were furious with George Bush because of the Supreme Court decision that put him in the office in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So we have part of America that is seething for George Bush. Then there is this attack, and in the attack, you want to rally around your president. So people rally around the president, and again, things appear to be going well. Things appear to be going well in Afghanistan. Nobody wants to stand up and say no to George Bush. He suddenly is at 90 percentile. And then what happens is when as soon as something starts to go south, the blood is in the water, the sharks attack, and all of this pent-up emotion that 50% of the American people may already have had for George Bush, finally, after all these years, they can let it loose. And then Ted Kennedy says it's all right to call the President of the United States a liar. And then it's Michael Moore, and everything hits the fan. And we and the man leaves office in 48 hours, perhaps the least popular president in the history of the country. That's what was – in my view, that's what's happening in the political cauldron of America.
The irony, Bruce, might be that he told everybody after 9/11 to get back to normal. So in some ways, maybe he encouraged this on his own self.
Except remember some of the atrocious things. I mean, it was such an opportunity to finally break our addiction from foreign oil that's fueling the war on terror, right? He didn't call for any changes like that.
That's true.
Instead, he said
– That was a mistake.
And he said, go shopping, right? When there was a call for national unity, Bush went back to the base ultimately, right?
Speaking about going back to the base, let's go back to his final farewell address to the nation this past week. He talked about 9/11 and its impact and its overriding concern of this presidency.
As the years passed, most Americans were able to return to life much as it had been before 9/11. But I never did. Every morning, I received a briefing on the threats to our nation. I vow to do everything in my power to keep us safe. There's legitimate debate about many of these decisions, but there can be little debate about the results. America has gone more than 7 years without another terrorist attack on our soil. This is a tribute to those who toil night and day to keep us safe. Law enforcement officers, intelligence analysts, homeland security and diplomatic personnel, and the men and women of the United States Armed Forces.
His obsession with preserving the American people, is he successful in that, Art? Because we've not had an attack, how much of that goes to him and his policies?
Oh, I think he deserves credit for it. I also think that in many ways he's a president who was made to order for al-Qaeda and other Islamic radical groups.
Right.
Keep in mind that al-Qaeda denounced President Bush during the 2004 campaign before the election. They've denounced Obama as well, but they waited till after the election. They're a criminal and evil group, but they're not stupid. They didn't denounce President Bush because they thought it would help hapless right. John Kerry.
Right.
Bush right. can quite rightly take credit for the fact that there hasn't been a second strike. I worry a lot about a second strike. I think Biden was right. President Obama is much more of a threat to these radicals, and there may well be a strike. I thought it was a lousy presentation. I write twice a week for Scripps Howard. I was already watching TV to write a column about his statement. I thought it was so inconsequential that I wrote a column about something else. Read Eisenhower, read Bill Clinton, policy details, read Jimmy Carter, sermon as he was leaving, but Ike above all. Those are interesting farewell statements.
We've got to take some calls, and we promise we will do that when we come back to Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont, and this the last Sunday of the Bush administration. From Spokane, Washington to Skokie, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the telephone number on America's great radio stations and XM and Sirius satellite radio as well. Our Democrat this evening is Dan Johnson Weinberger. He is a graduate of the University of Illinois and the University of Chicago Law School. He is the president of Progressive Public Affairs. He is a lobbyist, primarily at the statewide level of progressive causes. Nick Zitzen is also with us. He is a public policy expert from Washington, D.C., who recently has moved back to Chicago. He's with Dykema Gossett, which is a policy public policy organization, and also he was on the staff of Tommy Thompson at HHS and also served Mitt Romney when he was the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And also joining us this evening is the A.W. Clawson Professor at Thank Carthage you, College, and that is Art Sear, author of the book After the Cold War, and nice. Again, one of our instant historians who's offering his assessment
yes.
of all things presidential. Talking tonight, this is the final broadcast of the Bush administration. We have lots of callers on the line. Let's go to line two, Spokane, Washington. KXLY is the affiliate. Mike, nice to hear from you tonight.
Thank you, Bruce, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And I want to apologize to you. I called last week and we had trouble on the phone line, so I want to apologize for that, Bruce.
Okay, well, we will blame somebody else, but nice to hear from you again.
All right, thank you. We had 61 inches of snow here in Spokane in December.
So. Wow.
Yeah, so we're trying to reach Al Gore, but he's revising his global warming. He's in Florida right now, so where it was 70s, but in our Detroit Lions, 0-16. But a couple things here. You know, President Bush on his foreign policy at times was arrogant, let's face it. The Secretary of Defense, the Secretary of State would not talk to each other at times. There was arrogance in the administration on foreign policy, and this arrogance hurt the foreign policy. On the plus side with President Bush, he was pro-life, which many people support, and I did, from conception to birth. And so for that, we're grateful. President-elect Obama, I wish him well. I enjoyed seeing him in the caboose there, the antique caboose. He will help support Social Security. Of course, he supports abortion up to birth. I voted for McCain. So that's all I wanted to say, Bruce, and God bless. Hope to see you in Spokane.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's go to Youngstown, Ohio, where Morris is listening to us on WKBN, the Big 57. Go ahead.
Yes, Bruce, and Happy New Year. And I just wanted to say a couple of things. I am an American who happens to be black. I voted for George W. Bush back in 2000, the first and only Republican I've ever voted for president, because I thought he would bring people together. But by 2004, I was woefully disappointed.
Why? What did he do to tear people apart?
I think that everybody who says September 11th was the defining moment. That's absolutely right. And I think it's become almost cliche to say that this guy threw away a lot of political collateral worldwide and here in this country after 9/11. And I just really think that history will – I don't think he's an evil man like some liberals do. I think he was trying to do the right thing. But I think that he was misguided. I think he was stubborn. And I think he didn't listen to people when he should have listened.
What would you like him to have done?
I would have liked for him to – well, as far as – for example, in the case of Afghanistan – The job wasn't done there, and we continued to try to make something happen in hold on. I lost my train of thought because somebody's trying to call me. Do forget.
All right, hang on a second. We're gonna put you on hold. We're gonna go to Dan Johnson Weinberger for a response.
You know what he could have done, and he could have been a great president. He could have said, you know, I'm an oil guy. I understand oil, and we need to understand there's a war on terror now, and the way we're going to win it ultimately is by breaking our addiction to oil. So I'm calling for shared sacrifice. We got to raise the gas tax. We got to roll back the tax cuts and put the money into alternative energy and alternative fuels. He could have had anything he wanted in 2002. He could have passed anything under the sun, and that would have taken a lot of my guys and say, well, you know, it's like Nixon going to China. He's taken our issues and he's implementing them. So what's our justification to vote against him? But he didn't choose that path. He chose the hardcore, you know, base path of, you know, squelching dissent, having an atmosphere where you felt unpatriotic if you said, gee, I think the president's policies are wrong here. Remember, that was part of the culture, too, in 2002, 2003. If you critique the idea of invading Iraq, there's a feeling that you're being unpatriotic, where the White House press secretary said, you got to be careful what you say nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, warrantless spying on Americans, that sort of national security state that clearly seems to extend farther than it should in the judgment of most Americans. You know, that was the big shift where I think he went the wrong direction. And if he had tried to be the uniter, he could have, you know, locked in that governing, you know, permanent Republican majority. But I think Morris is right. He threw it away.
But again, in doing that, do you believe that had the Democrats made a bigger case of that? But because, you know, the Democrats did talk about the warrantless, spying to some extent.
Yeah.
They didn't make it a big issue in the campaign with John Kerry, though.
Right.
They were somewhat fearful.
Yeah, I don't.
And wasn't the reason they were maybe a little bit fearful was that to some maybe that was the answer why there had not been another attack?
Yeah, I don't think it sells well. I think
it's a bad issue.
Right,
it's not a winning issue.
No, I think you're
for
right.
For a small sector of the Democratic left, it works, but that's about it.
Well, people that care about civil liberties and think that the government's overreaching. You
a
know,
small sector.
Yeah,
Democratic left.
Well, there's a lot of Republicans. You know, there's some civil libertarians that are Republicans too that think government's
that.
Too big, but not a majority.
It's not a majority. Let's go to Austin, Texas, where Leota is listening to us on KLBJ on line two. Go ahead.
Hello. Yes, I'm going. I have an opinion that I think all of you will probably scoff at.
We never scoff. Only at each other.
I happen to believe that there were weapons of mass destruction, and I recall that there was a report that people of the region saw scores of trucks lining up and taking stuff to Syria, and that they took the seats out of planes and filled them with something, saying that there was starvation in the area, they had a drought, and they were taking foodstuffs, which was a lie. And I think what happened, I think that Saddam Hussein just moved the stuff out fast.
Let's let Art Sear respond to that.
Oh, the caller's absolutely right. We're not going to scoff. In fact, he had weapons of mass destruction from time to time.
Of course he did. We know.
If I could answer your question, ma'am, thank you again. It's very thought-provoking and insightful. We gave him the components of part of them when he was our ally, and he used them against his own people as well as against Iran during their long-term war. That's one reason intelligence is such a vexing business. I think the invasion of Iraq was a major strategic blunder because the sum total has been to reinforce Islamic radicalism throughout the region and, in particular, the power of Iran. Also, the president himself admitted in his final press conference press meeting to his credit that, in fact, they had been wrong about that. Their intelligence reports were wrong. Colin Powell, an enormously influential man who endorsed Barack Obama, as you probably know, said it was the worst and most embarrassing and most humiliating moment of his professional career, the false speech that he made at the UN.
Let's go to Lockport, Illinois. Mike is listening to us on our flagship station, WLS. Mike, what grade would you give George Bush?
Well, a D for disappointing. I voted twice for him, and given the choices, I would do that again. But I think he did some really good things. I think the tax cuts originally, his response to 9/11, 7 years he kept us safe, the Supreme Court, AIDS in Africa, but he had so much momentum going with him, and going into Iraq, I think all of us that were giving him the benefit of the doubt were saying, well, he must know something we don't know.
Mm-hmm. A lot of
trust
people
the president,
sure.
And let's see that. and we felt that he was going to keep us safe, and we wanted to rally around the president. And in addition to that, so he overplayed his hand. He should have seen militarily what a blunder that we would have had to come in with 500,000 troops to occupy. Yes, we could come in with the small amount that we did. It was a military blunder.
I don't deny for a moment that the mishandling of Iraq is really the big black mark against the Bush administration. But there was a realization that the surge might change things.
I'm telling you, as a Republican, okay?
Right.
What is so incredibly disappointing, the opportunities, like Nixon went to China. He had the opportunity to cut back against the grain, as we say in football, and go where they're not. In other words, for instance, I'll give you a real good one. Take the sword out of the hands of our enemies. I am a Republican that cannot wait to get an electric car so I can get a bumper sticker on the back of my car. I didn't give to terrorism today, and I didn't give to Russia. And I got to tell you something. If he would have supported that, if he would have come in with a tax credit and said, hey, we want to take the Chevy Volt, and we want to give license that. We're going to help out GM, and we're going to license that to Ford and Chrysler and give them money and put 1 million of those on the road and cut our imports. Both Republicans and Democrats, left and right, would have got on there.
Let me ask Mike, Dan's
got a comment.
Mike, I'm the Democrat. Let me ask you a question. Would you have supported that? I think you're right. That's what he should have done. But would you have supported if he said, look, the way we got to do this is by raising the gas tax? We got to get people to stop buying so much gasoline and give people an incentive to buy those Chevy Volts that haven't been made yet. Would you have supported that tax increase?
I didn't hear Democrats saying any of this either, just for the record.
Our mentality, we would have, Republicans would have supported that as it's what we have to do to change because we're at war.
Mike, we've got to move on. Thanks very much. 1-800-723-8029. In case you've just tuned in, what is your final assessment of President George W. Bush? Tonight's the night to give it. No more Bush talk after tonight. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back soon from Chicago. From Palm Springs to Fayetteville, North Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Let's go to Jerry, listening to us on WLS in Chicago. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, I want to thank President Bush for keeping us safe for the last 7 years, and I certainly hope that President Obama-elect can do the same.
Right. I do, too. I think we all pray for that. And I would say that of all the things that have been said about George Bush, if the one thing that Barack Obama must be able to say 4 years from now, he must be able to say the same thing, or there's going to be there will be political problems.
And you know,
the expectation is high.
Yeah. And the scary part.
And may I say one more thing?
Yes. One more thing.
As being from Chicago, I know how Obama got into politics and how he rose so quickly. And I do hear things about him that console me a bit, but there are a lot of things about him that I'm afraid of. So I just hope that he can do what's right by all people.
I think he will, and hopefully he will. And I think I was saying something during the break that I want to share with everybody. I mean, the one person who doesn't get much credit for Barack Obama being the president-elect of the United States, is Senator John Kerry. If Senator John Kerry had never given the okay to let this relatively unknown Senate candidate from Illinois an opportunity to speak to the Democratic convention, he would have never gotten the exposure. He certainly would have been elected, I still believe, the U.S. Senator from Illinois, but he would not have had the boost. And so I think that Barack Obama is president tonight because of John Kerry.
And it was John Kerry's call. You know,
yes, it was, personally.
Yeah, he aggressively picked him
out. It wasn't some staffer that did it.
No, right. It was. But the one thing I wanted to say that's scary is that if you think about, 9/11 happened in the first year of the new administration. The World Trade attack in 1993, that happened in the first year of the new administration. So I think, if you buy the colors of the danger zone. I think we're going to be in the orange zone for the first year of the Obama administration.
I think you're right, and I think Joe Biden was correct.
Yeah.
All presidents, regardless of who would – I mean, had John McCain been elected, he too would have been tested.
Because that's right.
Presidents of the United States get tested, and they get tested. Let's go to Cynthia in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say, and I was a Bush supporter, that the big thing that he did – that brought his approval rating down was his focus on providing goodies to illegal aliens, because the amnesty completely ticked off all his supporters. The Democrats were going to come after him and savage him anyway. What he had was his own supporters, and he ticked us all off with the amnesty for the illegal aliens, the S-chips giving tuition to illegal aliens, the Medicaid bill paying for the health care of illegal aliens, and he just could not get off that illegal alien thing. And then in Iraq.
But Cynthia, can I just interject for a moment? I mean, that should not have been a surprise to you, because when George Bush emerged in 2000, what made him a national figure was he was the Republican governor of a major state that had support from the Hispanic Hispanics.
In that state. And there are a lot of conservative Hispanics in this state who do not want the invasion of illegal aliens. Hispanics are not all for this crazy huge invasion of illegal aliens and all of the welfare, which it's creating. It's going to do what FDR did to the blacks, create this huge population of Hispanics who are living in ghettos, getting a check from the government hand to mouth. And Hispanics in Texas are not strongly in favor of that for the most part. But the other thing that George Bush did is that he did mess up in Iraq, because he wasn't forceful enough, and he didn't kill Muqtada al-Sadr, for one thing, and he didn't win the Battle of Fallujah the first time around. And he should have just stopped listening to James Baker and Colin Powell a long time ago. And people like this ivory tower intellectual you got on the show.
Oh, that must be you, Art.
We got a shot.
Are you going to take that sitting down?
Well, actually, it's to me, to my academic ears, it sounds like an endorsement. I think you make a lot of really bad points. My perspective aside, FDR and blacks, that's a basic misrepresentation of history and rural migration. But that's an academic's point. You make a very good point concerning immigration. The most fundamental cleavage in the Republican Party today, I believe, is between corporate Republicans like the president and his father, and the working people who are essential to any party maintaining a strong position in Congress and getting the White House. When this first came up, the president said, "I don't believe in vigilantes," the corporate Republican talking. He has a wonderful regular guy facade that is to some extent authentic. Immediately, he changed his clothes, he changed his accent, and he was down there talking to the Minutemen on the border. This lady represents an extremely important point of view in the Republican Party that's alienated. Fortunately, nativism, anti-immigrant sentiment, candidates like Pat Buchanan who beat that drum don't go anywhere.
And Tom Cantrato went nowhere.
And let me just say about Cynthia's point. I think it's worth referencing that she represents what should otherwise be considered a core part of President Bush's base.
Right.
She hates him for this. People on the far left never gave President Bush the credit for the political courage to actually say, if we're going to have any kind of meaningful comprehensive immigration reform in this country, I'm going to have to take a position that will alienate my base. No credit from anybody on that one, so I'm going to give it to him right now.
I think the one thing in closing that hasn't received its fair share of coverage, and again, Art, I think you alluded to it in an earlier response, but again, when you look historically at doing something that maybe the base of his party was not terribly excited or not a lot of political capital to gain there, and that is the tremendous initiative with AIDS in Africa.
Yeah.
No lesser world figure than Bono said that George Bush was the greatest president in the history of the country as it relates to the issue of AIDS in Africa. And so literally hundreds of thousands of people will be alive because of the initiatives of George W. Bush in the continent of Africa. On that note, we have to say farewell to our Democrat, Dan Johnson Weinberger. He will be here for a second hour to continue to beat the pinata for George W. Bush. Nick Zitzen is also with us. He's been our Republican policy supporter of George W. Bush and the ever-popular, but not in all circles, Art Sear from Carthage College has joined us. The pointy-headed liberal. He's kind of, he'll stay in that ivory tower for the next hour of our show. If you're listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on television, next week we're going to be talking about President Barack Obama.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar Center, can you help with directions? Say,
I need a lot of help.
Oh, dear. I can help you with directions or other OnStar-related issues.
I am lost, lost, lost. I don't think I'm that far off, though. I am looking for Potomac, Maryland, Great Elm Drive.
Okay, I can certainly look for that for you.
OnStar turn-by-turn navigation is there for all the times you sort of know where you're going, but you're not really sure.
I do have it, and you are only about 6 miles away, so you're not too far at all.
Ah, see, my senses were tingling. I was starting to get shaky.
Your route has been set up for you. Is there anything else I can help you with?
That's perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for using OnStar. You have a good day.
You too.
In a quarter mile, take the exit to Route 22 West.
OnStar is standard for the first year on over 50 GM models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations. Requires ABS and directions and connections plan. Not available in certain areas.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
If you've got pain, you need the patch.
The Icy Hot Patch. Powerful, targeted, fast-acting pain relief that stays put without the mess. Icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away. In a variety of sizes, from back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. So you're covered whenever and wherever you hurt. Stop pain right at the source with Icy Hot Patches.
Pain's no match for the Icy Hot Patch.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Should a man over 50 take the same multivitamin as a woman? Why would you, when you can take one-a-day Men's 50 Plus Advantage? A complete multivitamin specially formulated for the concerns of a man over 50. The only leading multivitamin with both support for prostate and heart health, plus ginkgo for memory and concentration. One a day Men's 50 Plus Advantage, the complete multivitamin with more of what matters to you. One a day, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
I do like to tell jokes. My jokes are pretty corny.
You've always wanted to know who's on Match.com, and we want you to know it's okay to look.
Knock, knock. Who's there? And it'll be Cal. And I'll say, Camu.
His Match.com username is Junkfoodie, and you can email him right now.
It's never really that funny, but it's so corny, they laugh anyway.
With 20,000 new people joining every day, we guarantee you'll find someone special in 6 months, or we'll give you 6 months free. Visit Match.com today for details.
AutoZone. Are you overdue for an oil change? If so, don't put your car's engine at risk.
Get in the zone.
Now at AutoZone, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil conventional motor oil and a Fram Extra Guard oil filter for just $16.99. That's right, $16.99. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Don't wait until it's too late. Maximize your engine's life and performance. Get to AutoZone. Do it yourself and save.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to some telephone calls. Let's go to Brian in Schaumburg listening to us on WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Those sound bites you played at the top of the hour were Exhibit A. I think that George W. Bush was the worst communicator to ever occupy the White House since the invention of radio. He just could not get a point across. He did not inspire confidence. You just were left wondering what he meant after he would say something. Yeah. And then my other main point is his presidency will be defined by 9/11, and let's review the facts of 9/11. On 9/11, we were attacked by Saudis and Egyptians, and most of the money that flows to Al-Qaeda flows out of Saudi Arabia. But for some reason, the Bush administration never wanted to fess up to that fact and always wanted to ignore that. So their strategy was to hide the Saudis and to push Saddam Hussein to center stage, and he was the boogeyman. We would not notice the Saudis. But the problem on 9/11, we were attacked by Saudis and Egyptians who were running around this country illegally because they had illegal immigration status with fake identification, which is a huge problem in this country. another problem that they wanted to sweep under
Let's let Nick Zitzen respond to what you've said.
Well, Brian, thanks for the call. I'd like to take your first point, only because I think we've talked foreign policy at this point. I think it's totally legitimate to say that the Bush administration's primary failure was communicating with the American people. The very fact that President Bush would leave somebody like Scott McClellan as his primary messenger to the American people through the White House press corps speaks to me to a total failure to recognize that communication was a serious problem. Tony Snow, very capable press secretary. I wish Tony Snow could have served longer. I think that he would have done more to assist President Bush in trying to communicate complex messages to the administration at difficult times. But that was a huge problem. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, I think to the caller's point, I mean, the situation is that, again, in that clip we just played, I mean, the president is not an articulate speaker. He's a slow thinker. He's a slow talker. And to some extent, he's a slow actor. He certainly was the case in Katrina as part of the failure of the federal government at that point. Let's go to Dennis listening to us in Frederick, Maryland. He's listening to us on XM Satellite Radio tonight. Dennis, I guess you're not. Victor, how about Victor in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, listening to us on KELO. Go ahead.
I just wanted to express I appreciate listening to your show. I listen every Sunday evening.
Thank you.
And my wife and I believe, and most of our friends, that the president has done an outstanding job during a difficult time in our country's history. And two things that I think that the Democrats have distorted, I think that they are, they're saying that the reason we went to war in Iraq was because of weapons of mass destruction, and that was not it. Since the first Gulf War, things had been simmering with Saddam Hussein. He had been playing with us, and he violated the terms of the surrender agreement. I have friends who are Air Force pilots who flew the no-fly zone. They patrolled it regularly, and he shot at our planes every day. And then the other point I wanted to make was the weapons of mass destruction. In 2006, there were two U.S. senators who held a press conference. They were on the Intelligence Committee, and they reported that from 2003 to 2006, our military had found over 500 sites of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So I agree with that lady that called earlier. And then last summer, on July 5th, the Associated Press reported that we had uncovered 50 tons of uranium in Iraq. And the United States military and the other countries that were helping us had guarded that uranium until it could be safely transported out of the country, and the government of Iraq sold it to Canada for use in nuclear reactors.
Dan Johnson Weinberger has a comment for you, Victor, as you speak.
Victor, nice to meet you. Let me see if I can get you to agree with this statement. That George W. Bush believed it was the right thing to do to invade Iraq because Saddam Hussein, as you said, those problems have been simmering for a decade.
Yes.
And that the 9/11 attack allowed him the flexibility to make a case for invading Iraq. But it really wasn't about the weapons of mass destruction. It was really because they thought it was the right thing to do to keep America safe. Would you agree with that, Victor?
I would.
So I think that's why I think you happen to be right. I think they felt sincerely they're going to protect America by taking out Saddam Hussein. And maybe they fudged the numbers and fudged the weapons of mass destruction, but they sincerely thought they were doing the right thing. I think the problem
by the regime change.
Yeah, yeah.
As did Bill Clinton.
We would have liked regime change.
Yeah, he was the father of
that's right.
Did almost
change.
Every major
right.
Democratic
right.
politician.
Everybody yeah. would have liked it. Sure, who wouldn't like it, right? He's a thug and a horrible horrible guy.
But the difference here is
they were
you have people talking about it, and then you have George Bush who did it.
And under false pretenses, because the American people don't support a military invasion of another country because they think regime change is a good idea, and that's the problem.
I think the overthrow of Saddam Hussein and regime change in Iraq was something clearly understood by the American people at that particular time.
You think it could have happened without the idea that there's a mushroom cloud over Manhattan if we don't act?
I think the fear of the mushroom cloud is what pushed it over into a very popular thing. But again, the other question, which I want to get back to and get Art's position is, because when we look at what George Bush has done in the past, And when we look at the rhetoric that we've heard from President-elect Barack Obama and all during the campaign, it appears that maybe 1 year from now, 2 years from now, 3 or 4 years from now, Art, if we were all around this table, we will be talking about President Barack Obama and whether or not Afghanistan becomes the albatross around his neck. Because he has said that that is, that it, to him, that's where the war on terror has to be fought. It's where troops need to be beefed up. It's where he has said that he wants to shift troops. These are all things that, you know, if he is correct, he's going to continue the war on terror, in, you know, using his boogeyman, if you will. And that is the Taliban that and the insurrection that exists in Afghanistan. Do you have any more confidence in the ability of the United States government under the leadership of Barack Obama to be successful in Afghanistan as compared to George Bush and what he has done in Iraq?
There are two things that make Afghanistan a very, very vexing area. One reason why Rumsfeld especially wanted to invade Iraq was because he felt it would be easier than Afghanistan. The British lost three armies there in the 1800s, and the Soviets lost decisively an enormous occupation force in the 1980s with our help to the Mujahideen. 2 points. We have NATO as well as the United Nations behind us in Afghanistan. Our close Turkish allies, who've been quite alienated by our invasion of Iraq, have not only had troops but senior command responsibilities in Afghanistan. Secondly, this is often unpopular when I mention it at Council on Foreign Relations seminar not long ago, but Nixon and Kissinger were able to deflect Turkish farmers who were principal suppliers of the drug trade to the enormous market of the world, the USA, in the 1970s by giving them high subsidies, paying them premiums to start growing, instead of illegal heroin poppies, pharmaceutical poppies that could be used, not much different, that could be used by illegal pharmaceutical companies in the U.S. and other countries of the world. A terrible problem that inspired the very good film, The French Connection. The main entrepot was Marseille in France, was solved. I would like to see us take this kind of approach toward Afghanistan. That's the second point. We do have alliance support. I'm very glad the caller mentioned the no-fly zone. Saddam shot at our pilots. He didn't knock down any planes, but because of modern avionics, as you know, we're basically invulnerable. It does get to the point that Saddam was pretty well fenced in by the UN sanctions before the unilateral American invasion. I'd commend the collected works of Richard Nixon in 1994, writing in Beyond Peace, almost a decade before our attack on Iraq. Nixon made the point in print very presciently that Saddam is a nuisance, he's a headache, he's a pain in the neck, he's a threat, and he's a murderer. But don't destroy Iraq, no matter how much he tempts us to do so, because if we destroy that regime, Iran will profit enormously and become a regional hegemon. I think that was very persuasive, and I think Nixon's writings are very useful, not terribly exciting, but very useful in other dimensions of our foreign policy.
Dan, are you prepared to be coming back to this program defending the war in Afghanistan?
Yeah. When he said during the primary campaign, and he caught some heat on it, if we've got actionable intelligence where Osama bin Laden is in the hills of Pakistan and the Pakistani government won't take him out, if I'm president, I will. I thought he was absolutely right. We have an enemy. Enemy's al-Qaeda. They're the ones that knocked down the buildings in New York and in Washington.
So if it takes 2, 3, 4, or 5 years to accomplish it, you're going to be supporting that policy.
I wish I could pretend I lived in the Don Rumsfeld world where we'll be greeted as liberators. But the reality is it's really hard on that Afghani-Pakistani border to root out those terrorists that are a threat to us. And, yeah, I don't like war, but I don't like a nuclear bomb going off in Chicago either. And al-Qaeda is the only threat out there that can do it.
Nick, are you optimistic that the political left in the Democratic Party will be cheerleaders to a policy military action in Afghanistan for 2, 3, 4, or maybe 5 more years?
I certainly hope so. My hope all along for President Obama is that he's able to take the soaring rhetoric that inspired so many disaffected people and to continue to keep them as part of the dialogue after he starts making difficult decisions. It's great to be a candidate, particularly when you're following a grossly unpopular administration. Once you get in and you inherit the problems, it's fundamentally difficult to govern and to keep that broad-based support.
We've got to pause. When we come back, I want to talk about the transition. It appears to be going well. We want to get your reaction to that. 30 more minutes, at least on Beyond the Beltway of the George Bush administration. If you want to talk about it, you got 30 more minutes. 591-8900. I'm Bruce Dumont. Back shortly from Chicago. From Youngstown, Ohio to Boston, Massachusetts, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Before the break, I inadvertently gave a wrong phone number. I've been on the air now for 29 years. I inadvertently gave the local WLS number. Our number is 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. I believe that is the first mistake in 29 years.
Mark the tape.
It must be that all the pro Bush supporters are calling
That's
the
right.
wrong number.
They're all calling the wrong number. We'll take more calls in just a moment after I mention that our Democrat tonight is Dan Johnson Weinberger, graduate of the University of Illinois and the University of Chicago Law School. He is a lobbyist for progressive causes, and he is the founder and president of Progressive Public Affairs.
And our president-elect was one of my professors.
That's right. And wow. He gave you what grade?
A.
Gave you an A, so yeah. If he walked in the room, would he say hi?
Yes, he would.
He
At
would
least
say hi?
That is what I tell everyone I know.
The big question is you just got to make sure that you're in the same room with him sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Whether that's likely to happen.
We shall see.
He's been a guest on Beyond the Beltway in the past, but maybe not in the future. Nick Zitzen also joins us. He is a policy wonk. He is with Dyke & Magosset. That is a Washington-based, but also you have offices in Chicago. And in 50 words or less, what do they do?
Chicago-based. It's actually a national law firm. Chicago's now their biggest office. They have 400, 500 lawyers and five or six of us who don't practice law but do other useful things for people who are willing to pay for it.
Okay. And basically government relations.
Government relations, public relations, marketing, communications, anything.
And you worked for Tommy Thompson. You also worked for Mitt Romney when he was you were the scheduler for Mitt Romney when he was the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Actually, appointments, meaning appointments to boards and commissions and human resources.
So you didn't make appointments, literally appointments, just boards and commissions.
Yeah, people used to ask.
Did anybody ever make a contribution and get appointed to a board or a commission like as we do in Illinois?
Actually, I can tell you shockingly that Mitt Romney had absolutely zero interest in rewarding supporters, which was incredibly difficult for somebody like that.
Art Sear also joins us. He is the A.W. Clawson Professor of International Relations and Political Science at Carthage College. That is just north of Chicago in Kenosha, Wisconsin, author of the book After the Cold War. We're going to take calls in just a moment after I want to make a couple of mentions of a couple of things. I want to call your attention to the website of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It's museum.tv. Museum.tv. We have found a couple of things in our archives that are currently available as streaming media. One is a United States Senate debate featuring the newly appointed senator from Illinois, Roland Burris, in a Democratic primary debate, a race that he lost. But if you want to see what Roland Burris would be like talking about national issues in a debate, it's museum.tv. It's running there right now. And I believe it's one of the few pieces of Roland Burris discussing, certainly in debate form, that is likely to happen again. But it's a little nugget. And the other thing is, obviously, for the next 48 hours and for the last 48 hours and certainly on Tuesday, all of the networks, both cable and over-the-air networks, are going to be giving you wall-to-wall coverage of the Barack Obama inauguration and the various inaugural balls and celebrations in what is likely to be probably the be-all to end-all insofar as presidential inaugural festivities. And again, you will be inundated with it from wall-to-wall television and to some extent radio and internet coverage. But again, if you go to museum.tv, we will share with you a piece of videotape that few people have seen. It is a private film that was commissioned by President John F. Kennedy in 1960 to record his inauguration. So it is the John F. Kennedy inaugural ball and celebration in 1961 on January 19th.
Oh,
January 19th of 1961 from the National Armory. It's a throwback to not only the early days of Camelot, but the relationship with Hollywood. Frank Sinatra is the master of ceremonies. Mahalia Jackson sings the Star Spangled Banner. There's poetry by Marian Anderson. There's Ethel Merman performing. Anthony Quinn, Peter Lawford, Sidney Poitier, Sammy Davis Jr., the Rat Pack, every major star, Lauren Bacall, Humphrey Bogart, all of the major Hollywood stars surrounding John F. Kennedy. There's obviously a commentary by John F. Kennedy, and Jackie Kennedy is part of it. It's a unique film that's never been on television before, museum.tv. So if you want a real flashback to a long, long time ago in the early days of Camelot, you can find it at museum.tv. Let us go to Margaret now, listening to us on WLS in Chicago, and she is weighing in on the question of the night, which is, what is your final assessment of President George W. Bush? Go ahead, Margaret.
Forgive me if I'm a little slow here. You'll have to help me. What I wanted to say was I think the media was perhaps a little unfair to George W. Bush in that I don't have a television, Bruce. I have a radio. And I could listen to stations in Chicago, and you could almost quote it word for word. You could go down the dial on the news, and it would all be the same, all of it. And I thought, well, I wonder where the news media is getting their news from. And it's the AP, okay, they get it from Associated Press. Well, where is Associated Press getting their news from? And that's important to know, the source. You know, does the source have a particular point of view? I mean, I listened when Bush was president, and, like, there was a lot of stuff about Palestine, a lot of stuff about the Palestinians, nothing about the Israel and their being bombed month after month. That wasn't covered. But any time a Palestinian stubbed his toe, that was covered. And, like, Bush was pro-Israel.
Yes,
and
he was.
I'm sure he felt the heat for that, okay? And I thought, well, that's funny. They cover one side but not the other. And like,
that's a frequent criticism that a lot of conservatives have about George Bush and about conservatives in general. I know you disagree with that, Dan, but Nick, what's your assessment on the level in which the media maybe gleefully went after George Bush? He certainly gave them enough fodder.
And, Bruce, that would be my point. If you go back to 2000, President, then Governor Bush, ran an incredibly disciplined campaign for the presidency. There was a very tight message. Everybody was on message. It seemed to me that when they got to the White House, there were too many opportunities for the press to glom onto silly mistakes or messaging tactical mistakes. Now, granted, there was substance later, and I'm not disputing that. I do think that the White House communications operation, which in a modern presidency takes control of how the administration's messages shared through the press, was woefully inadequate for a president who was not a natural communicator.
And also, not only we talked in hour number one about the problems of communicating insofar as the style, but again, when you say, I'm looking for, you know, Osama bin Laden, bring him to me dead or alive. I mean,
right.
How can you not gravitate to that? When you say, bring it on. I mean, there was this Texas cowboy bravado, and then when you throw in a mission accomplished, it seems to me that he was carrying around a sign on his rear end that said, kick me all the time, because his rhetoric would get him in trouble all the time, even though I believe his heart, this is where you and I disagree, Dan, I think his heart was and is always in the right place. But it's a mismatch.
I think it's hard. I think he's a well-intentioned person. I don't think he's hell-bent on evil or world domination. But I think, you know, he had predisposed notions of what he wanted to do, and most of those turned out to be bad ideas. I think his economic policies, the facts are they turned out to be bad ideas. I think his foreign policy, the facts are they turned out to be bad ideas. So I don't think he's got a bad heart. I think he's – I mean, I got to say, every time I see George Bush –
When you say bad ideas, so you believe that Iraq is a better place today without Saddam Hussein than with him?
No, I think the world is a less safe place today after the invasion of Iraq than it would be had we not invaded Iraq and instead put those resources where they ought to be.
Based on what?
Al-Qaeda, we don't have Osama bin Laden. You know, we don't have – Al-Qaeda is still thriving. Afghanistan has not been won. That's what. I mean, the big question is,
and yet everybody says that if you got Osama bin Laden, I mean, that's just the head. That doesn't mean that the rest of the organization goes away.
I'll take
but
it.
You think the world is less safe?
Totally
Nick,
disagree.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah. Totally disagree. And frankly, I think the point that resonates a lot of the time is that I'd much rather fight these guys in Baghdad than in Boston. And invading Iraq, for better or worse, gave them a front to fight in this war. And you can't deny that Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups have flooded that country to try to defeat us there. I want them fighting us in Iraq so that they don't figure out how to penetrate our immigration.
And George Bush, Bush used that as a rationale.
Yeah, sure. It's a very common theme. I don't think it's very persuasive in the administration because it implies what the economists and military strategists sometimes refer to as a zero-sum game. We're dealing with a revolutionary movement. 9/11, in fact, was carried out by a very small group of men. I'm persuaded that we have more, not fewer, suicide bombers, and we have more, not fewer, terrorists as a result of America's isolation in the world. One good reliable source is the International Institute for Strategic Studies.
What do you
in
I
London,
didn't ask.
And they argue that Al-Qaeda has been in a steady state or getting somewhat stronger globally in recent years, and I find that evidence persuasive.
Better to fight them there
than fight them here, I think, is misleading. I don't want to offend you, Nick, because it's overly simplistic.
Right.
I disagree, but that's fine.
I mean, with that logic, you can invade anybody, right?
Start a war. Because
well, you have to violate 14 UN resolutions before you qualify.
Yeah, I mean, there
didn't have anything to do with Al Qaeda.
Al-Qaeda was not in Iraq before we went there.
Right. They're totally disconnected.
We're going to be back. 1-800-723-8289. 15 more minutes in the Bush administration on Beyond the Beltway. 15 more minutes. Go ahead. From Texarkana, Texas, to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. And let's go to Steve listening to us on WAPI just north of Birmingham, Alabama. Go ahead, Steve. You're on the air.
How you doing, Bruce?
Okay.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. First of all, I wish, might as well say President Obama now the best. He's the president, and I'll be supporting him. Whether I voted for him or not.
Right.
As far as President Bush, I was against the invasion in Iraq. I had some Vietnam experience, and you just can't take a country and say, okay, we're going to set up a democracy, and there it is. But when it comes to him, President Bush, getting the blame for Katrina, I think that is totally way overdone. That was a natural disaster. In fact, in legal terms, I might call it an act of God. And you basically had a totally incompetent mayor, an incompetent governor, and you had people that really didn't do their part. And to put that kind of blame on the president for something that nobody had any control over, I'm sure things could have been done better. They always could be in any natural disaster.
I also think that that's the perfect, in my view, that's also the perfect example of where media bias and a media bias took over. Because I said, as a few moments ago, I think there were three entities of government. They all screwed up, but the only place where the criticism really stuck was primarily at the federal government, and because of Brown. And again, Brown was incompetent. I'm not defending Brown. He was a bad guy. But you know what? The fact of what the governor's malfunction and the idiocy of the mayor down there were also complicit to this.
But I think another important piece of that is, remember, it wasn't the flood that killed New Orleans. It was that the levees broke. And part of the reason is because we've been underinvesting in our physical infrastructure in this country. And I think that's important to remember, especially when we're thinking about passing an $800 billion or $750 billion dollar
and Congress,
stimulus pass.
Congress asked whether or not we should rebuild New Orleans.
Yeah.
That's a legitimate question, I think, to ask.
And we should put that money into our infrastructure.
Let's go to Alan in Youngstown, Ohio, listening to us on WKBN. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. I have to tell you, to some groups of people, President Bush has been an immense success. If you're Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, what more could you ask for? 9-1-1 wasn't about bringing down a building, per se. It was about ruining commerce and finance in this country. Well, looking at what's going on with commerce and finance, I think it's been an immense success. He also opened up two recruiting stations for al-Qaeda, both called Afghanistan and Iraq. We have brought immense numbers of people into the fold. You go beyond that. Tell me one success. Korea's just announced that they've weaponized their product. Pakistan is on the verge of war once again. And might I remind you, they are nuclear armed. We don't have as much to worry about Iran as we do about Pakistan.
I agree.
If you're a progressive, you have a lot to think, because conservatism is dead. There is no more. Everybody is running to Washington with their hat out. You talk about the auto people, for example. They don't care about the massive bailouts into the trillions of the banks, as long as they get their share. Nobody cares about the future.
Nick Zitzen wants to jump in and jump on your roll, but go ahead.
Oh, let him try.
Hi, Alan. I appreciate.
Yeah, Nick. Yeah, I like it.
Go ahead. Are you going to take that sitting down?
God, Alan, you put me into a cold sweat. I appreciate your enthusiasm. I'm just going to say this simply, that I'm glad you're safe.
I'm safe from what? My country is collapsing. What am I safe from? We've got.
I'm glad you're alive, Alan, and you can thank President Bush for that.
Untold amounts, bringing God knows what with them. What am I safe from? Al Qaeda has gotten just what it wanted. We are a mess. The new denominations of currency won't have the presidents on them. They're going to have the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers. What am I safe from?
Right. Alan, Tim in Elmhurst, Illinois. Tim, are you there? Tim and Elmhurst, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, are you on the air with Alan?
This is Ken Gustafson.
Go ahead, Ken. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Well, I was just wanted to point out that nobody ever gets it straight why it went to war in Iraq. The United Nations passed a resolution, you know, in November. I forget the song. It had some number on it. It demanded that Hussein provide a detailed description, including a paper trail and people involved in creating the paper trail and operating it, of where he had gotten his weapons material for weapons of mass destruction from.
And they rushed the, and they ran those inspectors
out. Biological weapons.
Right. That. Let's move on.
And they he never. They gave him a date, March 31st, I believe it was. And if they didn't,
we're going to move on to another caller. Let's go to Tim and Elmhurst. You're kind of rambling on a little bit. Go ahead, Tim. You're next. Are you there? All right, let's go to another call. Just give me a call, folks. I'll answer. I'll talk to anybody. Go ahead. Are you there?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Marie.
Yes, Marie.
I just wanted to give you my my estimation of Bush, and I would give him a B-. That's B as in boy.
Uh-huh.
I just feel like it's real easy for certain people to criticize and be self-righteous about President Bush, considering that he doesn't work alone. And he's surrounded by advisors, and a lot of them, in my opinion, do not have the best interest of America in their agenda. Well, I also think we have a media in our country who I feel are a dangerous fifth column.
All right, on that note, we're going to have to say farewell to you, ma'am. We're running out of time. The only thing I'm going to say, I want to thank Nick Zitzen for being with us, representing the Republicans and carrying the water for George Bush on the final Sunday
welcome.
Night of the Bush administration. Yeah, Dan Johnson Weinberger, we'll look forward to you playing offense for the next 4 to 8 years on international affairs. Art Sear from Carthage College, the A.W. Clawson professor, thank you very much for joining us as well. Again, we began this program looking at George W. Bush about 2 hours ago. We launched what became the Bush presidency back at KLBJ when he was the governor of Texas. So we've gone through at least 416 programs on the Bush administration. The one thing I will say, you've heard me say it before, and I know some of our liberal Democratic friends don't like to say it, but again, I do give George Bush credit for keeping us safe. And also, I want to kick hats off to Vice President Dick Cheney as well. I'm Bruce Dumont. Until next week, our thanks to Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart for their assistance in the production of this program. Good night from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar emergencies, are there any injuries? I don't know. I'm contacting the 911 center now.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a lady who was just involved in a collision near exit 81, Peoria Street.
Ma'am, what happened?
I was just traveling down I-70 and a car hit me from the rear. It looks like he flipped over, but another car also got hit.
Three vehicles total?
Yes.
Is anyone injured?
I am just shaking tremendously. The other two cars are flipped, so I'm sure there are.
We'll get help out there. Fire, EMS, as well as the police.
Okay.
With OnStar automatic crash response, built-in sensors can automatically alert OnStar. The advisor can give 911 your exact GPS location to get you the help you need.
Would you like for me to remain on the line with you until the first responders arrive? I'm okay. Please, know we're here. What do you need?
Built-in automatic crash response is standard for the first year on over 50 GM models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
If you've got pain, you need the patch.
The Icy Hot Patch. Powerful, targeted, fast-acting pain relief that stays put without the mess. Icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away. In a variety of sizes, from back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. So you're covered whenever and wherever you hurt. Stop pain right at the source with Icy Hot Patches.
Pain's no match for the Icy Hot Patch.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Should a man over 50 take the same multivitamin as a woman? Why would you, when you can take one-a-day Men's 50-plus Advantage? A complete multivitamin specially formulated for the concerns of a man over 50. The only leading multivitamin with both support for prostate and heart health, plus ginkgo for memory and concentration. One-a-day Men's 50-plus Advantage, the complete multivitamin with more of what matters to you. One-a-day, the official multivitamin of Major League Baseball.
You know, one of my favorite places to sing is my car.
You've always wanted to know who's on Match.com, and we want you to know it's okay to look.
A 1962 Cadillac on a long road trip. I mean, what else are you going to do?
He's Match.com member Crooner Cool, and you can email him right now.
Baby.
With 20,000 new people joining every day, we guarantee you'll find someone special in 6 months, or we'll give you 6 months free. Visit Match.com today for details.
AutoZone.
Are you overdue for an oil change? If so, don't put your car's engine at risk.
Get in the zone.
Now at AutoZone, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil conventional motor oil and a Fram Extra Guard oil filter for just $16.99. That's right, $16.99. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Don't wait until it's too late. Maximize your engine's life and performance. Get to AutoZone. Do it yourself and save.
Get in the zone. AutoZone.